Have you thought about the possibility that if things had gone differently since the first Earth Day in 1970, the people working to protect the planet easily could have been led by ranchers and fishermen? And do you think about what it's going to take for our country to get to a place where politicians and everyday people in the United States figure out ways to find common ground in civilized ways and look for that win-win? That's some of what we're going to be discussing this next hour, and you won't want to miss it. So welcome, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. We are disruptors for good. Translation, sometimes troublemakers, and we like that. We are game changers, doing the good thing, the right thing, not just for ourselves, but for all beings who call the earth home. Thanks so much for listening and for being a part of our world. And a big shout out and thanks to the sponsor of this show, Tanks Green Stuff. This company is amazing, and the products they sell are equally so. It's a locally produced organic compost made from landscape trimmings, green waste, that would otherwise go to the landfill. Their manufacturing facility uses the most stringent criteria to ensure quality, purity, and consistency for their compost. Tanks Green Stuff is 100% organic, soil amendment that contains no fertilizers or petrochemicals or additives. And for people using compost, that's really important to know. They always test for vital nutrients, pathogens, and heavy metals to make sure that their compost is the best and highest quality available. Plus, their company is a great partner of ours and supports our community in many, many ways, including providing compost at no charge to schools and other nonprofits. They are a very generous, very thought leadership-driven company. More information about their product and where it can be purchased can be found by visiting tanksgreenstuff.com. And I have to love that. The owner of the company is Jason Tankersley, and we all lovingly refer to him as Tank. So check it out. I hope they go national. Our show today is so timely and perhaps one of the most important shows I've ever done. We titled the show The Conservative Naturalist and the Environmental Hypocrite. There is so much vitriol and divisiveness going on in the world right now on so many issues, and one of these issues is certainly about climate change. Is it human caused? Is it part of a natural cycle? Can human beings do their part not only to slow things down, but to reverse the current trajectory of accelerated warming? My regular listeners know that we do hours of research and cross-referencing for every show, and we did even more for this show out of respect for our guests. The research still holds in terms of where the global scientific community still stands on human-caused global warming. But at the end of the day, what really matters is that climate change is impacting all of our lives, and we have to figure out ways to work together to face what is coming at us every day in terms of extreme weather, the displacement of millions of people, and the impact of severe weather we read about in the news almost every day. Because of the emotional triggers that come about as a result of these climate change conversations, I spoke with our two guests prior to this interview to assuage all of our fears and to commit to keeping our discussion civil and respectful, which I believe is the way all of my shows are produced anyway. That being said, there is still controversy over this issue of climate change. People within families and among friends often hold different views, and it can cause quite a bit of pain and anxiety. This show is about a father and a daughter who often find themselves on very different ends of the spectrum in this conversation. We're going to hear about their journey and how they have come to a place of mutual respect and have found ways to navigate what continues to be the dangerous and painful terrain. Please join me in welcoming Jamie Beck Alexander, a Green Biz contributor, and Glenn Beck, and I have to say not that Glenn Beck, because I have to say that, Glenn, I'm sorry, a conservative.
I'm used to it.
Yeah, it's Glenn with two N's, and the one with one N probably won't be on Mrs. Green's World anytime soon by mutual.
Actually, I think he's two N's as well.
It is? Okay, well, we can't even do that. But anyway, welcome so much, and thanks for having the courage to be here and talk about a family issue, because that's what it comes down to. So, Jamie, why don't we start with you? We'll put the target on you first. This all started because I read an article in Green Biz, which is one of the most respected sources for green news in the world. Give us a sense of what the article you wrote was about and why you wrote it.
Great. Yeah. Well, thank you for having us on the show. So I'll just start by giving a little background to the article that I wrote. So, you know, if there's a spectrum of people who care about climate change, then, you know, I'm solidly on the very concerned, pretty anxious side. It affects, you know, how I feel, how I go about the world. And in my quest to kind of figure out how I can be the most impactful person on this issue, I realized that I had to face this issue that, you know, in my own personal life, I had people in my, you know, in my personal life, my family, my father, my mother, my sister, my friends, that you know, I can't talk to them about climate change. And so I realized that I had a long way to go in being effective in this issue. So I it was around the same time that I came upon the work of an environmental psychologist. Her name is Renee Lertzman. And she talks about how, you know, just talking about climate change is an important first step and having empathy across divides. And I sat in on a session she gave on what she calls environmental melancholia, which is, you know, people that work in climate change often, you know, get anxious or you know, feel melancholy about it.
I resemble that remark.
And in this session, the first question she asked as sort of a prompt was, what is one thing that you enjoy doing that you feel guilty about? And I, you know, I really thought about that question and I immediately thought, well, I enjoy traveling. I enjoy flying around the world. I love to go to like remote exotic places and flying has a significant carbon, you know, emission.
Yes, a carbon footprint. It does.
Yeah. And then, you know, and I love to drive and I have two young kids and there's, you know, a lot of waste produced by having two young kids. And I, you know, have guilt about all of these things. And that helped, you know, that question really helped me, you know, I started thinking, oh, well, my dad also loves to drive. And so we can relate on that. And my parents don't travel at all. So they're actually, you know, they don't do a whole lot of flying. They're, you know, they're comfortable in their town in Pennsylvania. And I respect that. And that means that they, on that front, they're much further along than I am. And it just, this question of, you know, really helped me kind of have some empathy and some, it set kind of a new foundation for how I look at my, you know, my personal relationships. And it kind of made me realize my dad is actually a much more likely environmentalist than I am. He's a scientist. He was a Boy Scout. He's very comfortable in the outdoors. He taught me everything I know about the outdoors. You know, he could name any constellation or the genus of any plant. And how did it happen that I became the environmentalist and he, you know, rolled his eyes at anything involving the word environment or climate change? How did that happen? Like it would be much more obvious to me that he would be the one leading an environmental movement than I.
Right.
And so I started kind of, the article is really to examine why that happened, both in my personal life, and then is that relevant to the environmental movement as a whole? And if so, is there an opportunity here for us to come together and maybe redefine what it means to be an environmentalist or broaden the environmental tent to include and to be able to be led by people, naturalists like my father?
So that's huge. I mean, there's a lot in that answer, a real lot in that answer. And, you know, we have all of these questions that I want to ask, and then more keep coming in. It's like this just in. So, Glenn, did you know she was going to publish this article, and what was your reaction?
Actually, I had no idea this thing was coming. She shared a link with me. Actually, I think she actually shared it with me via email while she was sitting in the next room, while she was home for Christmas vacation.
Okay, so that was pretty courageous, face to face.
Oh, that wasn't necessary, but it really touched me. It genuinely touched me. Yeah, this has been a source of division between us for a good number of years. And just the opening of the door, you know, It really did open the door and gave me some insight into her thoughts, and that she was being thoughtful about it instead of my perceived notion was she's just being arrogant and pushy about, you know, I need to do things the way she thinks I should do them, as opposed to now, you know, I realize that there's a lot of thought behind that.
Okay, so that was really forward motion. And Jamie, do you still consider yourself an environmental hypocrite? And if you do, why?
Good question. I think that we all have, you know, none of us are perfect. And I think there's moments in every day where I feel that tension because I have to drive my kids to daycare. And I, you know, whatever it is, I mean, I think it's in a lot of ways in modern life, it's unavoidable to have carbon emissions. So I think there is some level of hypocrisy that I live with. And but I think the recognition of it was really important for me. And it was a really important way that I could reconnect with my dad and just be a less, I think be a more effective, like, person in working on this issue.
And I think to your point, and it's a really, really important point, I feel like an environmental hypocrite. I don't want to phrase it that way anymore. I think that I continue on the path to conscious living, but it's challenging. And one of the things that happens with me is in still eating meat. If you truly cared about lowering CO2 emissions, a lot of it has to do with cows, and not to mention the devastation I witnessed myself when I was in the rainforest for cattle grazing so that there's enough beef to feed the McDonald's and the Wendy's and the Burger Kings and all of that. So I think you're right. I think for all of us, and even for you, Glenn, there are things you want to live consciously, and it's just not easy. I don't live in a yurt with a composting toilet. You know what I mean? I use electricity. I have a hybrid, but I still drive a car. So I think that's one of the most important messages of this show. There is not the ability to be extreme on this path to making a difference. So to both of you, and I don't care who goes first, because we love all of the people on this show, what's come about as a result of the article being published, either between your relationships or reaction you've gotten from friends and family members? What happened?
I'll start with that one. Shortly after the article was published and Jamie shared it with me, I hesitated to do this, but I actually ended up doing just put a post on Facebook and see what my friends and family and so on would say about it. And I was honestly very pleased with a lot of the reactions I got from friends who, a lot of them think similarly to the way I do. And they were very complimentary and said, you know, this girl gets it. On the other hand, Jamie, I think you've had some experiences on the, on the Green Biz site where there were comments? And some of them were pretty ugly.
Yeah, there was definitely some criticism. I was honored by my dad's friends and, you know, contacts on Facebook and how complimentary they were, being mostly, you know, conservative and, you know, people that I would have previously thought would never want to, you know, would never want to read anything on Green Biz. And I was really honored by their feedback and just that they were so, like, open to, you know, to what I was writing about. And then on the other side, but yeah, there was quite a bit of negative feedback from the more of the environmentalist side, saying, you know, you're being too conciliatory with people who voted for Trump, and, you know, you're being apologetic, and that's not helpful. And so it's more, you know, I found that I was feeling more defensive in my own, you know, in what I perceive to be my own side of things. And it was definitely better, you know, well received from my dad's contacts, which was really, really striking.
So I want to read a quote from your article because, and I want to respond to that. And I'm, you know, sometimes my head goes on to the next thing, but I was really listening, and it shocks me. I don't spend a lot of time on Facebook. I've been spending more lately, unfortunately, just getting sucked in and being mindful of that. It's not a good place to spend much time, in my opinion. I'm much better served reading a book, but there's enough of that going around on both sides where the comments I read, I have a friend who disagrees with me about everything pretty much, but he's very civil in his disagreement. And he put a post up and I was so shocked at what people that are his friends on the conservative right said. And then the comeback from the far left, it's like, this is disgusting. Like this, I'm getting off Facebook now and I'm going to go read something that makes me happy. But anyway, so to your point, yes, that's what we're hoping we can do less of and still be passionate and convicted that our beliefs are the right beliefs. I mean, that's the honest truth. So I'd like to read a quote from your article because it stung and I felt guilty as charged. Somewhere along the line, people like me decided that lifestyles like those of my parents, rooted in small towns and content to stay there, were inferior and unsophisticated. We did this with little respect for the connection to the natural world around them that they may have, and without acknowledging the low carbon footprint of their local ways of life. So that kind of elaborates your thought process, right? That you commented on. It's like, yeah, I'm doing this, but my dad and my mom aren't. So it's like, is there anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I would just say, I mean, I think that thing that you just read is really what created a lot of the tension, I think, between my dad and I. Dad, I don't know if that's accurate, but I feel like that kind of looking down, like I was the daughter who went away and saw the world and understood things and, you know, came back and, you know, looked down on my friends and family who never left. Like, that just did not set us up well for, you know, for coming together on any issue, because it just felt like I knew the truth and I was trying to convince you. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So go ahead. What do you think, Glenn?
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. Yeah, she would come visit on a holiday, bring the kids along, and instantly there was tension. And this article just went a long way toward melting that.
So that's just so positive. And I just wanted go ahead.
I was just going to say, it was as crazy as, like, I would fly across the country with my husband and two kids and then, like, you know, look down on my parents for not recycling, a Coke can or something. And it was just like, you know, I had to really stop and say, I made the decision to move to San Francisco away from just about all my friends and family so that, you know, we have this carbon footprint every time we want to see each other. And then I come home and I judge them for not recycling. It just felt like, of course they would be like rolling their eyes at me. That's, you know, it's ridiculous. And it feels good to have, like, you know, named that and realize that and hopefully be able to move on from that. Luckily, hopefully they can forgive me for their
Well, there's
Jamie, do you remember the remark I made to you the last time you were here? I said the environmentalists left the refrigerator door open.
yeah, exactly.
But there's a point to this that is, to me, the underpinning of what really needs to be talked about, and that is solutions, because there is a big carbon footprint for flying, but it's not, if everybody stopped flying tomorrow, it would not solve the challenges we have in terms of CO2 emissions. And that's the truth. And lots of friends of mine that fly do carbon offsets, which I have mixed feelings about. But I mean, the at the end of the day, to me, in my ideal world, everybody will be able to see what is happening to human beings in the world right now as a result of climate change. So the cause to me becomes irrelevant, and it's the human suffering and the displacement of people and on that becomes, so how do we find the common ground, stop fighting, and answer some of those solutions? So on that note, I think we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Please join us for a new on-demand podcast every week at MrsGreensWorld.com. You can also find us on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and SpeakUp Radio. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Stay in touch with information about healthy living, sustainability, contests, and events by signing up for our newsletter on our website. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or others, please write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. But now, back to our story.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. Thanks for joining us. The conservative naturalist and the environmental hypocrite is what we're talking about today. Joining me are Jamie Beck Alexander and Glenn Beck, our first ever father-daughter interview. Jamie caught my attention when Green Biz, an organization and a publication that I highly respect, published her article called "My Dad's a Conservative Naturalist, I'm an Environmental Hypocrite." And I was really so touched because of my own personal journey that we reached out to both of them and decided we can do this. The world needs to hear what you both have to say, and I really do thank you for being here. So the question, so Glenn, for you, and we talked about this when we had our pre-conversation to make sure everyone was going to be civil, and if not, we were going to go to our corners, and it wasn't painful at all. But I feel as though people on the other side make judgments about me, and it happened to me this week, and it put me in a very, very tearful and very vulnerable space because I am a progressive. They made decisions about what my other beliefs are as well, and I felt very attacked. And I asked this person, I said, "Why don't you ask me what I believe instead of painting me in a box?" So, do you think judgment cuts both ways from both sides?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I've had some reaction from people on the liberal side or the progressive side, if you will, that have been pretty nasty. So as a result, you know, I kind of watch what I say, watch what I do in certain circumstances, because I honestly don't want to fight it. You know, I'm just don't need to confront it.
Yeah, but you think it comes from both sides, both the Republican conservatives and the left. I mean, you don't think you don't think
sure.
We have a corner on that market, because I'm not one of those nasty people.
Yeah, I mean, there are enough memes going around on both sides of this issue, and reactions are equally visceral on both sides, I would say.
So there are lots of inflammatory headlines out there about climate change, climate deniers, attacks on the EPA, and the list goes on. How much do you think the headlines hurt us moving forward or working together to find common ground, which is the end game that works for all of us? A healthier planet works for all of us, regardless of our beliefs. Do you think that the news and the media just make it a lot worse?
Oh, of course. They're certainly out to do, they're running a business. They're going to put headlines on things, which are going to attract a lot of eyeballs. And, yeah, that's their whole purpose, is to be in business. There are very few, I think, news outlets that are genuinely news outlets anymore.
And I have to ask you, there is a lack of good information, insanely lack of good information. And I would say all of the three major stations are guilty as charged. I'm sure we would disagree on which ones have a little bit more of the truth. let's be honest. I don't trust any of them completely, and I trust one a little bit more than I do the others. So where do you go to get information you can trust that you believe tells all of the story? Or is there such a thing?
I don't think there really is such a thing. I mean, I'm thinking of raw news as I remember it back in my younger days. A Walter Cronkite type of person.
Right.
Report the news, report the facts. and not go so far as to give a sour expression or a grin when he's reading something to indicate his approval or disapproval. That just doesn't exist anymore.
You're so right. You are spot on. That dignity and respect of people, it was not even a conversation. These are people that we did trust. And I'm back in your generation. It's like, yeah, Walter Cronkite, where's he when we need him? Another one was Ted Koppel. I mean, he was just he just asked a lot of questions. And there's a difference between reporters and commentators. And I think that's part of where the news problem is as well. These are not reporters. They're they're doing commentary on what the news is supposed to be. So, Jamie, who do you trust and how do you decide what's credible?
I guess when it comes to environmental issues, I definitely trust. I mean, I think New York Times is doing excellent climate reporting right now. I think they really are reporting facts about climate change. They're making it more of, and they're reflecting the larger issue that it's becoming. NASA has amazing data around climate change that is, that comes from global science, the global scientific community, and is rooted in, in science. But I do agree that no matter where you look, you really have to get beyond the headline and read the entire article.
And make sure a sentence or two hasn't been omitted, which then skews the whole interpretation of what was said. I find that to be very disturbing, and I have to be very careful of that. So this is not a hostile act, but one of my most trusted sources is NASA. I trust them. National Aeronautics and Space Administration, and here is what they have to say about climate change. Multiple studies published in peer-reviewed scientific journals show that 97% or more of actively publishing climate scientists agree climate warming trends over the past century are extremely likely due to human activities. In addition, most of the leading scientific organizations worldwide have issued public statements endorsing this position. They then provide a partial list of these organizations, along with links to their published statements and a selection of related resources. So I felt it was true transparency. They just report in very plain, boring scientific detail their findings. So is NASA a questionable source?
Yeah, far be it for me to go up against, community of actively publishing climate scientists. I got to say that I'm not necessarily a climate change denier. I remain in a position where I remain to be thoroughly convinced. And big part of the reason is that it comes with so much baggage associated with it. There's so much political so much animosity around the whole thing. And I can hardly sit and actually listen to discussions about it because you invariably come down to lecturing me about my lifestyle and that I'm doing things I shouldn't be doing. I should be ashamed of the things I'm doing and that kind of thing. It's just a total non-starter.
Jamie, anything?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. It's devastating that this has become, or that this is an ideological issue and not a strictly scientific one, because I think if it were talked about without the emotion and the blame and the, fear and, it would be something that we could come together more easily on that. And I feel like you understand, the geological and climate systems better than the average person. And so I think that, if we took the, all of the emotion and politics out of it, it could be something that we could really, come together on. And I think increasingly it's becoming an opportunity, like it's becoming an economic opportunity. And so I do hope that, as it moves, as climate change or whatever we call it moves from being, you know, an environmental frame to more of a capital market frame. You know, because climate change is affecting, you know, all parts of our economy. The damage from the 2017 hurricane season was like over $200 billion or something crazy. You know, and there's so much opportunity in it with renewable energy and new technologies. I think there's a lot that we can come together on if we move out of the politics of it.
And this is a wonderful segue for my next question. For the month of May, we did a series on women leading the charge for the preservation of the planet and climate change and global warming. And we highlighted five just brilliant women doing very different things. And one of them, I mean, I'll never forget this interview. Her name was Alexandra Bilak, and I interviewed her. She was in Geneva, and she's director of the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center. And I think both of you, having spent now a couple of hours with you, it's like you're my new sounding board. It's an amazing organization. It's a data-driven organization that collects information on internal displacement, so displacement of people within countries. And one of the things she talked about is the underreporting of the millions of people who are displaced because of climate change. Droughts, hurricanes, tsunamis, you know, the list goes on. And it's about 33 million people, which is a lot when you think of the absorption for that number of displaced people. So here's a thought that I had in knowing the show was coming is, what if leadership, real true thought leadership, came together and said, what we really have to start focusing on is climate adaptation, because it is happening. There is extreme weather. So we get mixed up in this battle of who caused it, whose fault is it? And I know we have to address that. I don't want to, you know, seem ignorant. Yes, we do. But maybe if we started with looking at climate adaptation and the reality, habits would change. Think of the possibilities if we thought about what we are going to do when it's in our backyard, or it's our neighbor, or it's our river. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? It's very philosophical, but both of you, I'm sure, have responses to that. What if we could change the conversation and focus on what are we going to do about the 33 million people, some of whom are in the United States, the marginalized communities, their lives are ruined forever. And I'm watching some of the specials that they live in their homes that are 75% destroyed, no running water, no toilets. You know, we have enough problems in this country. So what are your thoughts on that, with both of you?
I guess I first have to ask, what is climate adaptation? Is it us adapting to the climate, or
yes,
us adapting
yes.
to the climate?
It's adapting to what the climate change is already happening, and finding, for example, drought-resistant crops and
okay.
storing of water, like in Arizona, obviously a very, you know, we're going to be very threatened by water shortages. So one of our departments in the city of Tucson is doing massive work for water efficiency, you know, saving water, water conservation, storing water, working on experiments for, you know, recharge water, so that we can use basically sewage and purify it and have it be available for drinking. So there's a lot, and especially in the food area, about, you know, people starving because of extreme drought. So adapting to that in the way we live and eat, and we won't be flying a lot of places, Jamie.
Right.
So that's.
Well, I'm reminded of a college course I had a long time ago, and it was focused on population growth. These things you're describing are not surprising in the context of realizing that our population has increased a heck of a lot. I'd imagine since that time in 1970, our population in the United States has nearly doubled.
Right.
So we're putting people are choosing to live in areas, not to belittle anybody's disasters, believe me, but there are people that are choosing to live in areas that people wouldn't have lived in before. Through technologies, we find ways to accommodate, and make things livable, but you can only press it so far. There's only so much water coming down the Rio Grande River. Latest, I think I saw some photos and a little article some time back about it basically emptying into the Pacific as a marshland.
And Jamie, what's your response to that? To looking at the common ground issue of climate adaptation.
I think anything around innovation and technology are things that we can come together on. At least my dad and I, and I think of my dad and I as maybe a microcosm of for a broader coming together. And I think anything around, you know, opportunity to look at new technologies, you know, like water conservation you're talking about, and seawall, whatever adaptation techniques we can come up with. I think human ingenuity is something that my dad and I can relate on. Like, I think my dad would get excited about new technologies to help that come from human achievement. I think that's
sure.
Something that crosses the political aisle.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
One of the big factors is energy. The way we're producing energy now, we're burning fuel reserves. The pet peeve of mine is that we're spending all kinds of money and all kinds of resources raising corn, and then we choose to put it in gasoline and burn it. We're burning food. It doesn't make any sense.
Glenn, I'm serious. I could, think about hugging you right now, and that's scary. It's like, you are spot on. I mean, you are spot on. It is inherently wrong, and you are spot on. So this is what's giving me goosebumps. We could have conversations about this that people would then say, oh, we don't disagree on everything. And I'm sure that we don't.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry I interrupted you, but it's like, dude, I'm loving this.
That's great. I mean, for me personally, it goes back to, again, things in my younger days when our outlook was optimistic. We had a positive outlook for the future. We lived in a world of plenty, and we expected our children to live in a world of plenty as well. And somewhere along the way, we picked up all this angst. Some of it founded, of course, but I think a lot of it is drummed up. All this angst about, oh, we have nothing and we need to be misers and live like paupers in order to preserve something. I think we can have our cake and eat it too, honestly.
And, you know, to your point, okay, people say to me, well, you know, why should I cut back on my carbon emissions and not buy a big truck that burns a lot of fuel? What are they doing in China? And this is at the bottom of what you're saying. My response to them is what my mother used to say to me. If someone jumps off the Brooklyn Bridge, are you going to do that? How? And I have said this to people. That's not the point. How do you want to live your life? How do you want to show up in the world? I don't have any control over the people in China. I don't have any control over anybody in my life. I get to make choices, conscious choices, and that's not the point, what they're doing in China or India, which is remarkable, by the way. I mean, especially China, who wants to control the solar market, which terrifies me. So solar, number one, most sustainable growth in 2017, green jobs. And it's to your point. It's like, stop burning that, using that for ethanol, and start figuring out what green jobs really look like. So we're going to have to take a break. Thank goodness they're short. They drive me crazy because we're always involved in good conversation. But when we come back, I want to share with our listeners the conference call we had before the show because we were worried. And one thing that I brought up about Beers, Ayers, and Grand Staircase monuments, and we'll talk a little bit about that. And then, shared goals. I'd like to go more about that. And then what do we do when things get heated up? Like, what are some things, I mean, even in marriages, good marriage counselors tell you what to do when the argument is accelerating. So I think there's a lot more conversation here because I'd love this show to be a role model for, not a role model, but just a starting example for people to back down and I have to do it, and I really have to do it. And this week was a test for me because I was attacked for my beliefs as a what did they call me? It was not very nice. Liberal. It was horrible. I'm not going to repeat it on the air. And then another one for not going far enough, for not taking on our utility company. So I got it from both sides. It was a rough week, folks. So stay here with me. More sharing about where do we go from here. We'll be right back.
It's Meredith, a proud member of the Mrs. Green's World team. We are disruptors for good, passionate game changers working to create a more sustainable, safer, healthier, and socially just planet for all. By creating podcasts like this one, we offer tangible solutions that inspire you to take action. We need your financial support to continue producing content, podcasts, film, and written works that engage, educate, and inspire our global community to fight climate change. Join us today. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click Join the Movement.
And a warm welcome back, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. The conservative naturalist and the environmental hypocrite is who we are talking to and what we are talking about. Joining me for this hour are Jamie Beck, Alexander, and Glenn Beck, our first ever father-daughter interview. And again, thanks to both of you, not only for being here, but for your willingness to share such a personal and intimate journey. And just on that 30-second break, I was thinking about the message of this show, and our tagline used to be, we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And for our hundreds, we literally have now hundreds of thousands of listeners, that's what I'm asking. Let's all of us press the pause button and start thinking and imagine maybe we will be the change that we all wish to see in the world, because I'm tired of the yelling and the finger pointing and the blame game, and I'd love to be focused on solutions. So, Glenn, is it okay if we go into, if we foray into that first conversation about bear's ears?
Sure, go ahead.
But it's such a good example to say what really happens. We knew it was going to be a difficult conversation, and we all have triggers depending upon what our views are. So I asked you about bear's ears and Grand Staircase monuments, and I read these headlines. Trump slashes site of bear's ears and Grand Staircase monuments. President Trump sharply reduced the size of two national monuments in Utah on Monday by some 2 million acres, the largest rollback of federal protection in the nation's history. I have verified that fact, me, Gina Murphy-Darling, because it's really just about measuring acres. And you had a response, and I hope you remember it, because there was definitely more to the story. So can you share with us what you relayed to me at that time?
Well, it took me a moment to recall, but I asked you, wasn't that the same acreage that President Obama took from private enterprise to make part of the national park system?
Yes, and that was not reported in the story. And when you said that, I went back and checked, and yes, it was. So there's the trigger, and there's not all of the information. So since then, I have had a friend from the EPA come and stay with me, and Glenn, I hope I have proven my civility to you and my credibility in terms of being authentic in this conversation. What she shared with me about bear's ears, because I wanted to know more and I didn't want to find it in something that was written somewhere. What she said is that the acreage was pretty much carved out to cover all of the uranium that's at that site, that the plans are for it to be mined. And of course, I mean, she works for the EPA. She said there are conservatives, there are liberals, there are progressives, there are, you know, it's not like paint it with one stroke, even within her office. But they're like, I can't even say the word. Like, it's so horrific to them because of the you know, the aftermath of what happens when you do uranium mined. And she said, you know, Gina, it's Humpty Dumpty. Once that is mined, there's no putting it back together again. And we're dealing with uranium tailings all over the country and cleanups in Superfunds right now. So it seemed to me more of talking to you about it when that happened for me, because I really do care. So what about that? You love national parks. You love, you know, visiting them. If that is Humpty Dumpty and we can't put it back together, what should we, who all of us who care about the planet, what should our voices be saying? What should we be doing?
Well, it truly is a Humpty Dumpty situation, isn't it? I love the national parks are there. That was a great opportunity. I mean, hats off to Theodore Roosevelt for kicking that whole thing off.
Truly.
It's great. I truly enjoy them. The fact of the matter is, though, I want to be able to get there to enjoy it. That takes a little bit of input from something. I mean, you know, you need some energy to run your car and get out there or ride the bus or fly the plane or whatever. You do need to be able to go about your business in order to enjoy these things.
Right.
That said, well, you know, you need a little bit of energy. I mean, the whole thing is truly all about energy. If we had enough energy, I mean, we could extract carbon out of the atmosphere and control the carbon level. So we could be a little more free about how we live our lives.
And you're getting to the deeper point, and I have to say that. I have to just absolutely affirm what you're saying. It's the same with copper. You think there's no copper in my cell phone? Do you think I want the copper mine that's being proposed here in our southern region? That's one of the areas where it's the highest tourism, one of the highest in the state of Arizona because of the bird sanctuaries that are in there. I don't want that done in my neighborhood at all. It's like, no, you can't do your filthy copper mining here. But I want copper. It's in my refrigerator and it's in my cell phone. So is that a case where we can hope for new technologies that are not requiring these natural, you know, minerals and all of these things? Because it's the complicated conversation. So how do we get from here to there? And it's totally valid point you're making.
Yeah, I mean, we count on this stuff. We need this stuff to maintain a reasonable lifestyle. So what do we do? I think we need to go about it intelligently. I think there's so many times when things like this, like the copper mine, or, for example, there's a gas pipeline trying to be built through this area right now. People want their natural gas, but they don't want the pipeline to go through. Well, you can't have the gas if you don't have the pipe. So what do you do?
Go solar. Go solar. That's what you do. I mean, that's like whole countries are going solar. So, I mean, and wind. I heard this whole thing from one of the climate scientists we interviewed about wind. And, you know, you live in Pennsylvania, so you know the progress that's been made in closing down coal plants. And in some cases, voluntarily, because they don't make economic sense anymore. Mm-hmm. So there's great progress for the quality of our air. And Jamie, I know you're still there. Are you like chomping at the bit and biting your tongue or getting excited or enjoying the conversation?
I am loving the conversation. I just wanted to say, I think this is really where the hypocrisy comes in, that I think is really important for us to recognize, as you just did, Gina. I mean, you know, to be, you know, protesting these pipelines and, you know, and the uranium mining at the same time that we're demanding those things is hypocritical. And I think it's important that we continue to push back now that we know that they're so damaging, but we need to also recognize at the same time that, you know, coal kept our ancestors warm, and we have, you know, all kinds of stuff in our cell phones that we demand to continue to be taken out of the ground. So I think recognizing that our own hypocrisy on the environmentalist side is an important level setting for, and I think that's what enabled this conversation to happen. And then, you know, and so I love that we can now talk about solutions with my dad, you know, having that groundwork laid. And I think really moving forward, I mean, I work for an organization called Ceres that is looking at, you know, we support businesses in you know, in being more sustainable because it's in their best interest from a business standpoint. The opportunity in terms of climate change and renewable energy, and that the cost of climate change should be integrated into their business models. And so we look at, you know, climate change from an opportunity, you know, economic opportunity perspective. And so I think that's really something that I'm excited about, that my dad and I can come together on moving forward.
We might have to, all three of us, get on that roadshow, and I'll be the moderator. But let's think for a minute. You know, it's just like, I kind of like cringe when you say environmental hypocrite, because languaging is so important. It's really important that we are aware of the challenges that are in front of all of us every day when it comes to creating health and safe environments for your children, my grandchildren, the beat goes on. There is the challenge of how to live a more sustainable life. And part of it is, like, I've done shows on recycling that would really make you nauseous about how many people, they have to change their cell phone, they need the newest cell phone, and they throw their old cell phones in the garbage. Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, liberals, libertarians, trust me, millions of cell phones are thrown in the garbage monthly. So it's the harder change in behavior that we're all ignoring. It's a behavioral change. And, you know, Glenn, you said something about population. Well, one of the top solutions in Paul Hawkins' book, Project Drawdown, is to decrease the population, educate women and girls so they don't have as many children, because that's the bottom line of one of the things that's causing so much pollution, consumption, and on and on. So isn't there a good case to be made for, you know, changing the language around hypocrite, which is a trigger for people? It's honest. It's an honest call out. But saying, I violate some of my own principles, how do we get from here to there? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I'm not sure about the, I mean, you talk about population control and education, and then it gets close to, the eugenics ideas, which are totally off the table. There's a couple different ways to look at it. I mean, if we would moderate our population growth as a planet, that would be a good thing. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think there are some countries that will see the population as an advantage. And if we decrease our population, they increase their then they got an advantage of some sort.
And the point of his, just to elaborate on that, his point is it's not any externally imposed government regulations on population control. The research will bear me out that if you educate girls, they choose to have fewer children. So it's not like a government sanction or, you know, imposition or penalty. But if you educate girls, they typically have fewer children, and then their children are educated. So it ends a cycle. I would not be in favor of anybody telling me how many children I could have, trust me.
There you go, yeah. Okay, yeah. So you meant education in a general sense rather than education about...
Yes, so thanks for calling that out, because it's a clarification that's huge. But in areas, you know, in places like India, where they have focused on the education of girls, and even in Afghanistan, they typically don't want to have six or seven children. They want to have two, because they understand what happens when you have two children versus what happens when you have six. So none of them can go to school. Instead of now, two of them can. You know, it changes the cycle.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I mean, economics in a family are a whole lot different than they used to be. I mean, a farming family back in the day would have had to have a lot of kids in order to put them to work to make the farm work. But that doesn't happen that much anymore. And farms are pretty much industrial anymore, and lots of kids in an urban household doesn't make much sense.
No, we could have another show on that, about what's happening in rural America and who's buying up those farms, because I know our food supply is close to being totally controlled. Okay, so from where I sit, we have to get this question in. All of us working together for a more sustainable and socially just planet means everybody wins. We all want clean air. I believe that. We all dread the mega fires. We all hurt when we see entire communities wiped out from extreme weather. So how do we find more common ground? This is one way. But what are some of the areas that you two have found that will help move all of us forward in a healthier and, I believe, better direction.
Jamie, you want to jump on that one?
Sure. I mean, I guess I'll start with what I have found that has not been effective. And I think I've learned that, at least with my dad, you know, trying to keep my emotion in check around this stuff has been really critical. So to come at him with, you know, this is your grandchildren's future, you know, that you're responsible for destroying, you know, that has not helped. That has not been helpful as a, you know, a conversation starter. So I've kind of done, you know, taken a different tact of learning from my dad and recognizing the areas that he, you know, has inspired in me. You know, I'll ask him questions about how, you know, tell me about, you know, why you love nature, or tell me about your, you know, whatever experience in the Boy Scouts, or, you know, just learning from him in kind of like non-sensitive way areas has been helpful conversation starters. Recognizing that he is a more scientific, you know, has a more scientific mind than I do and training than I do, even if we don't agree on where we take that, recognizing that and learning from him and looking for common ground, kind of taking the emotion out of it has been really helpful.
Okay, Glenn?
Yeah, I think I would sum it up by just saying that life is a gift, and we owe it to ourselves to do everything we can to enjoy that gift. This country is so big and vast and beautiful, people need to get out there and see it. I think if people would see it, see more of it, not just hop from one airport to another, but see all the stuff in between, I think we'd get a much better appreciation for the environment, for the people in it, and for the problems we face.
There couldn't be a better answer, and I'm serious, because to me, our connection with nature, I'm working on my next TEDx talk, and I had to really go deeper about what I wanted to say, and it's, you know, it's kindness to the earth, it's connection to the earth, and it's, you know, the awareness of what the earth provides for us. So it's all going to be about kindness in many facets of it. And the first step, I believe, for everyone is getting out in nature more, because that's being kind to yourself. And if you go to a park and it's covered with litter and plastic bags and styrofoam, and we have a park here where the water is down about 3 feet, it's pejorative, and you start thinking, why is this? Why is this happening? And there's that connection that we have lost so much. And we haven't even brought up the devastating impact of what I call, very technological terms here, gizmos. Because, you know, I go to restaurants and I see three-year-olds on their parents' phones. And, you know, there were times when I was in a restaurant with a three-year-old that I probably wish I had a phone. But we did things like, you know, give them little food and entertain them. So it's, you know, very, very valid points. So I just want to end with a quote from Paul Hawken, the force behind the best-selling book Project Drawdown. And he says that global warming is happening for us. It is in many ways a gift, presenting us with problems that we have to solve together. And I think, you know, this show, I had a lot of emotion around it, a lot of thoughts, and wanted to make sure that I showed up as respect, and I believe I did, as we all did. So, you know, if 200,000 people listen to this show and hear it to the end, maybe they'll have a little bit of a different roadmap going forward when it comes to how we all win. So thanks to both of you, as I said, for your willingness to share such a personal, intimate journey. And I just want to say, June 7th, we have a show that I hope everybody listens to. Debbie Rich and a young woman, 15 years old, named Cindy Loudermilk. She's a Girl Scout, and she's authored a book, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Achievements. And on June 12th, Stephen Most, Wildfires and Climate Change, Wilder Than Wild. So everybody, thank you for being here, for being a part of my world. And Jamie and Glenn, thank you. I hope you'll do your part to really promote the show and get the word out there, because I think this is a start. It's a small step, and it's a beginning. So thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. And well, I think we'll stay in touch in some way and see where we are a year from now, and hope that happens, because it's these are important conversations. Okay, everybody, we're wrapping it up. Thanks.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Seth.